Hi, everyone. I'm Deborah, and I'm an alcoholic. Okay. I celebrated 21 months last Tuesday, and it's been good. I'll talk a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I came to alcoholism late. I had my children. I was married. Things went pretty well until they didn't. And that was about in the year 2000. And at that time, on one weekend, my daughter was hospitalized at Stanford with an eating disorder. And my mother, they found the brain tumor from which she ultimately died. And I was very upset. And my family physician over the phone prescribed tranquilizers, sleeping pills, and Prozac. And every one of them said, do not drink while taking this medication. It may increase the effect. And I had been drinking some, and I found out it didn't take much. When I had a tranquilizer in me, it really didn't take much for me to be oblivious to my pain. And I think what I was doing was trying to push down my pain. And that worked really well, but it made me kind of really sloppy and sleepy. And my kids started saying things and my friends started saying things and I thought I had it under control. In 2005, I went to evening outpatient at MPI. And that was so I could continue in my very professional job during the day, which I managed to do throughout the whole time. And I took it seriously for the 9 weeks that I was there, but I got out and in six weeks, I met a guy and all of a sudden it didn't seem like I needed AA anymore. It was like, he seemed to love me and I loved him and that seemed to be enough. And so the meeting stopped and I never really got a sponsor and it really didn't take hold. And that lasted, but I was sneaking, which is a big thing in my history, it turns out, sneaking. And it really caught up with me again in 2009. And at my father's funeral, my kids busted me again. And it was the third time that they busted me, and every time it involved my being back east at my parents' house and they would find pills and alcohol in my suitcases. And so my daughter, who was about 25 at the time, gave me an ultimatum. My son agreed with her, but she was the mover and the shaker, and they insisted that I go to rehab out of town. And so I went to a very ritzy rehab in Southern California on the beach, and it was basically for rich white women. And I was able to read novels and get my nails done. And we went to meetings. We went to 9 meetings a week and we had groups. But when you start your day walking on the beach and you can read a novel to put yourself to bed, it was not as serious as I needed. Let's just put it that way. And I got home and it lasted for a couple of months because I was scared. But once again, I started sneaking and I would get a prescription from the doctor and hide it. And this went on, but I presented myself as sober after this. I went to meetings, several meetings a week. I had a sponsor. I didn't socialize with them because I was different, but I would go to people's houses and everybody knew that I was an alcoholic and I didn't drink. What they didn't know is when I went home, I still had a bottle hidden. And about 8 months after I got back from that rehab, I had a legitimate back injury and the doctor gave me opioid pain pills for it. And I thought that was great. And I was going to relapse prevention program weekly at MPI. And they did random drug tests there. And for 8 years, 9 years, I managed to never get caught on a random drug test. And I was lying to everybody. And so my children had their children. I had 5 grandchildren in 5 years. I was lying to my children. I was taking care of my grandchildren under the influence. I showed up in meetings and I took chips. And then my kids thought something was fishy and they wanted me to take a drug test. And so it got set up that I was going to do it at MPI at the Wednesday night relapse prevention meeting. And so what did I do? 5 days before the meeting, I just stopped taking all the pills. And that, you know, didn't feel so good, but I was able to do it. I still drank a little because that doesn't show up on a drug test. And I took the drug test. And about an hour later at the meeting, I had a seizure. And luckily, I was in a hospital and there was a doctor in the group and I ended up going to the ER. And what happened was my whole cover was blown. And this is years of lying to everyone. And my first reaction was denial and humiliation. Like there must be some mistake here. It really wasn't that bad. But they found out everything. I mean, they went back to my doctors. They saw it all. And I was terrified. I really thought I might lose my kids at this point. And for me, that was the worst thing that could happen to me. You could take my house and my car and my possessions, but if I lose my family, it was like there was nothing worth it. And I really messed myself up. I was in the hospital and then in a skilled nursing facility to get over the seizure before I went to MPI that time. And I did inpatient. Whoops. And I really did it this time. Because ultimately I realized how desperate I was and how frightened I was. And so I just put one foot in front of the other. And I met somebody at this meeting tonight who's still a friend who asked me to speak. I got out and I was living alone and I was really scared, but I decided to do it differently than I had done it in the past. And I started going to a meeting every single day and I got a sponsor and she was kind of a corny old fashioned big book thumper in my mind. You know, she wasn't cool like me, but I thought maybe that was what I needed. And I started having coffee with people in the program. And I wasn't thinking clearly for a pretty long time, but the days and the weeks and the months went by. And finally, by about 6 or 7 months, I started realizing that I didn't feel terrified all the time. I could be myself. People seemed to like me. My kids sort of were grudgingly kind of opening up again with reservations, but I just kept at it. And I wasn't looking for the promises to come true to keep me going. I just knew out of desperation that I had to really keep going, that I was old enough that I might not get another chance. And so what it's been like, it's been 21 months. And what I have to say is I didn't know how miserable and alone I was for all those years until now. And I can look back and realize that the thing that I wanted more than anything was to be connected to people. And by taking pills and drinking, I was in a bubble. It wasn't that I couldn't let anybody in because they might blow my cover. And so, you know, they say never promise you're never going to take anything again. It's like, I don't need to promise anybody. I remember how miserable I was. It wasn't that long ago. And so now what I can say that during this COVID time, my kids have been amazing. They live across the country. And for the first 60 days of shelter in place, my daughter, who I betrayed so horribly, she called me every single day with the grandparents on, with the grandchildren on Zoom. And that just really, really touched me. And so now I'm able to kind of let in the good and not always be looking over my shoulder like, is somebody going to find anything out? There really isn't anything to find out anymore about lying and sneaking. You know, I'm hardly saying I'm a perfect human being, but it just, living in the truth is such a relief. And so I guess, I think my time is just about up. I guess what I want to say to people is if you're in the beginning and if you're relapsing, keep coming back, because when it sticks, it's really terrific. So that's what I have to say. Thanks for asking me.
Thanks to my friend Matt for introducing me, for asking me. Thanks to Tammy for introducing me. Thanks to everyone here for being here and listening and being part of the fellowship. I'm going to do mine a little bit backwards. I'm going to talk about what it's like now before I talk about what it was like before. What it's like now is my life is very, very full. And I was just thinking before this meeting about what a crazy day I had. So I'm just going to tell you about my day. Sorry if this is boring you, but I got up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I rode my bike as hard and fast as I could to the top of the tallest hill in Portland, Oregon, where my other spiritual group was having a meditation meeting outside at 7 a.m. I did that. I jumped back on my bike, rode back home as fast as I could so that my wife could go off and do something with some friends. I made breakfast for my kids. I led another recovery meeting that's part of my other spiritual group. I made lunch for my kids. I went to my home group online. I went for a long bike ride with one of my sons. I went stand-up paddleboarding in the Willamette River. I made dinner. I made dough for some cinnamon rolls I'm making in the morning, and now I'm here. And somehow I managed to feed myself in between. And this is like, this is what my weekends are like. And it is so much fun. And it can probably sound a little bit like I'm an activity addict, and you know, maybe just a little bit, but just compared to what my life was before, where my life was work and it was drinking and everything else was just like a barely tolerated distraction. You know, my wife, my kids, my family, you know, my mom, my sister, it was all, you know, it was something that I kind of would just like kind of sing and dance my way through. And, you know, sometimes I was charming and sometimes I wasn't, but I would just like kind of tap dance my way through whatever it was I had to do and then get to the business of drinking or like get sober up and get back to work so I can make some money so I can do some more drinking. And I literally cannot go back there. I will never be there again. I will never be that person again. The AA has transformed me in a way that is irreversible. And I'm not saying that I will, you know, like I'm perfect and I will be maintain my physical and emotional sobriety forever. I don't know. But I do know that I have been changed forever by this program of AA and by the fellowship with all of you. So where am I coming from? Like, where, what was it like before? I grew up in an alcoholic family. So I've been around this for a long time. My father was an alcoholic his entire adult life until the day he died. And it was as is true with so many alcoholic families, it was our silent shame. It was something that nobody ever talked about. I mean, it wasn't just that we didn't talk about it outside of the house. You didn't talk about it inside the house. You didn't talk, there was no talk about it whatsoever. And really there was no talk about feelings. If I emoted in any way, shape or form, I was being melodramatic, and it was shameful. It was absolutely shameful. I grew up in a Calvinist family in the Midwest, and there were just like so many layers of crap pushing down on a healthy and earnest expression of emotion. And I knew, even though nobody talked about it, I figured it out relatively young that my dad was an alcoholic. I confronted him about it. It went nowhere. I tried going to Alateen. My mom tried going to Al-Anon. My dad never tried to get sober. We didn't realize at that time that, you know, Alateen and Al-Anon were actually about us, and we could go and benefit from it without him getting sober. But we were just like, well, we're wasting our time because, you know, Al-Anon and Alateen are about how you talk somebody into getting sober, right? So we stopped, and, you know, things just kept going the way that they had been. And I told myself, I was like, I'm never going to drink. I'm never going to be an alcoholic like him, but I can smoke weed and I can drop acid, and I can do all these other fun drugs, but I am nothing like him. Like, I'm nothing like my father. I'm totally different because I do cool drugs instead of lame alcohol. So, you know, I'm not suffering from his problem at all. And you know, that was going groovy for a while. Managed to like barely make my way out of high school, went to college. And when I got to college, I realized, oh man, doing these drugs is really tricky because I like need to think really hard in the morning. And when I am doing these fun drugs in the evening, my brain's all messed up in the morning. So maybe I should just drink. I mean, it's cool. You know, I'm a totally different person than my father. I'm having fun here with my friends instead of drinking like vodka straight out of a glass alone at home. Like, this is a totally different thing. Like, what? This is great. This is fun. I'm being fun. I'm being a fun person. Everybody likes fun, right? Let's have fun. And so I continued to have fun for 20 years, 20 years of nonstop fun. Well, except it wasn't all fun. It was mostly not fun. And in fact, I would say I was, you could say I was a blackout drinker. You could say I was a pass out drinker. What I really was a self-obliteration drinker. And, you know, it didn't matter whether it was the pot that I was smoking when I was a teenager, or the alcohol that I was drinking as an adult, I wanted to not exist. And when I drank enough, I could get to the point where I didn't exist. I mean, and this led to like all kinds of fun behavior because it was, you know, drink and drink and drink and drink and drink. And then like someone would show up with some other drug and you do that. And then you'd be passed out on the floor somewhere. Like that was my, that was my go-to routine, is that at some point in the evening, I would disappear and I would be passed out, usually like on the floor of the one bathroom in the house. Right? And everybody likes that, right? That's fun, right? This guy that's passed out in the middle of the floor of the one bathroom in the house. He's so big. You can't see this in Zoom, but I'm 6.5 feet tall. He's so big that he's literally like filling up the entire floor of the bathroom and nobody can get into the bathroom at all. It is very fun. So that was my life for, you know, I'm in my early 40s now. And oh, I forgot to say, my sobriety date is September 7th, 2015. My sponsor is Chris M. And my home group is Stark Reality. My very first home group was a men's group in North Portland. And every time you shared, you were supposed to say your sobriety date, your sponsor's name, and your home group, because it was really important that you remember your sobriety date, you have a sponsor, and you have a home group. So if you need to wonder about what your sobriety date is, work on that. If you don't have a home group, work on that. If you don't have a sponsor, work on that. But back off the soapbox to whatever I was talking about. What was I talking about? Passing out in various fun places. But maybe I'll get past the mess and I'll get to the message a little bit. So the thing, it started to become clear how not fun it was when I had kids. And I would not have called myself an alcoholic, but I knew that something was wrong. You know, despite the fact that I had spent years watching my dad drink, and He actually died of pancreatic cancer when I was 30. And I kept drinking through that and thought, you know, everything's cool. It was really when I had kids that I realized that something was wrong, because I had these two little human beings in my life that were just this amazing, precious thing. And bedtime is a pretty magical time when your kids are young and you work a lot, and you know, you get up in the morning and you're just like running around trying to get ready for work. You go to work, you come back, and it's evening and it's bedtime, and bedtime's this like magical twilight time when you're getting kids ready for bed and brushing their teeth, and I just spent the whole time just like, get your pajamas on and I'll read you this goddamn book, and go. Because when they were in bed, then I got to sleep, to drink, right? And that's when I got to be fun and go down in the basement and drink myself into unconsciousness. And I just like, I went through that for a few years and was like, well, that's not right. There's something not right here. But I still wouldn't call myself an alcoholic. So I went through years of my favorite part of how it works, which is the like, try only drinking natural wine. Don't drink on the weekends. Only drink on the weekends. Only drink socially. Never drink socially. Like I did all of those things. I tried all of those things. I had these so many routines. The one that I actually did for the longest time was I only drank once a week. I was like, I'm going to drink only one night a week. I'm going to go out with my friend who I brew homebrew with, and we're fancy gentlemen. We're fancy homebrewers, and we're going to go drink only fancy beers. These beers are so expensive that clearly we're connoisseurs and we're being fancy and we're drinking them only for the taste. And I would just get obliterated, right? If you're only going to drink one night a week, you're going to be like, well, I'm going to drink. If this is going to be my one night, then I'm just really going to get plowed, right? And I absolutely couldn't understand those questions when your doctor asks you questions like, do you ever just have a couple drinks and call it good? It's like, whoever does that? What's the point of that? Who just drinks a couple of drinks and calls it good? Like, the point of drinking is getting plowed, right? Of course. Went through that, like did all that thing for years. And, in hindsight, I look back at those years and I say, the thing about drinking is if you have to manage it, it's unmanageable. And you know, I was just like my dad. I mean, I was exactly like my dad, where I got up and went to my nice, you know, white collar job and was a professional and was respected and I was a pillar of the community and all that stuff. And then everything else is just gravy, right? Whatever else I do, like I'm managing it. I'm managing my life. I'm managing my drinking because I can like have the kids and have the wife and have the house and, you know, have the job and do all that stuff and have all these like ornate Byzantine plans of how I can manage my drinking. I mean, if you have to think about it that much, clearly it's totally out of control. And the thing, again, back to my kids and my wife and my family in general being my savior, the thing, kind of the thing that ultimately ended up leading me down the path to AA and to sobriety, true sobriety, was that my wife had a psychotic break after our first son was born. And she didn't sleep for a week. And there were a lot of extenuating circumstances that were going on. I could go into all the, you know, anyone who's had a child or who has been with someone who's had a child knows there's a lot of physical maladies that happen before, during, and after pregnancy. We just thought these were complications of that. And a friend of hers from growing up, who's a psych nurse, came by and she said, oh no, this is not cool. There is nothing cool about this. Like, she knows she needs to go to an emergency room right now. And so there was a lot of therapy and a lot of other things that came after that. And she has her own recovery. She's involved and is a facilitator for a recovery group for women with postpartum issues. But we both realized I had no emotional tools whatsoever. I had no emotional vocabulary. I had no way of dealing with her emotions because I didn't know what emotions were. I had spent so many years just denying emotions and just pouring alcohol on my emotions. I had no idea what emotions were. And so I started seeing a therapist who I did not know at the time is one of us, and saw him for years, and saw him as I was doing all these weird management tricks. And at no point, though, did I talk to him about my drinking. I never talked to him about drinking. I was totally transparent and open with him about every single thing in my life, except the drinking. And finally, one day I came in and I said, you know, we should really talk about my drinking. He said, oh, do you have a drinking problem? And I said, well, I don't think so, but we should just, it's not how much I drink or when I drink, it's why I drink. And I just couldn't put my finger on it, but I was like, I feel like I'm drinking for the wrong reasons. And there's a phrase that I've heard recently a couple times, which people have talked about drinking at somebody. And it was just, I think it was literally earlier this week, I heard someone in an Al-Anon meeting talking about drinking at someone. And I realized, oh yeah, you know, I was drinking at someone for all those years. I was drinking at me. I was drinking at myself. I wasn't even drinking at my alcoholic father. I wasn't drinking at any other person that I was frustrated with. I was drinking at myself because I was so incapable of understanding my own emotions that I was just kind of like trying to beat against the bars of my own cage that I had built with drinking. I was just like, you know, get out, get out, get out, get out. Maybe obviously it didn't work. But I really started to open up with him about this, you know, this concept of drinking for the wrong reasons, and was talking around in circles for probably a year around that. And then finally, one day I just came into his office and I was talking to him and I referred to myself as an alcoholic, which is something I had never said before. I'd never even really thought it. And he said, really, are you an alcoholic? Would you say? And I said, I don't know what else to call it. I don't know what else I would say. You know, how are you going to describe someone who is doing what I'm doing? Like, I have to call myself an alcoholic. And there was just this switch. It was just having said that, there was just this opening. And it wasn't like I just sobered up overnight, but I just had a totally different perception of the world and what was going on. As soon as I was able to admit to another human being that I was an alcoholic, even if I didn't like fully internalize it, I didn't fully believe it, just saying those words made a huge difference. And I stopped drinking. I went totally cold turkey, all on my own, no program whatsoever. And I was a total asshole. I was like such a typical white knuckle, dry drunk. My wife actually started suggesting that I go back to drinking again. Like, that's how much fun I was as a dry drunk for about a year. And then a dear friend of mine who I've known for years, who I know has been sober for 20 years, told me about AA, about his home group. And I said, well, but that doesn't make any sense. Why are you going to AA? I thought AA was a place where you went to get sober, but you've been sober for 20 years. Like, why are you still going? You're like, you're done, right? You're fixed. You're cured. What's that all about? And he told me what the real deal was. And I remember very distinctly before I went to his home group, we're sitting in his car and he turns to me and he was like, okay, Gus, like many of us, you are literally too smart for your own good. And your brain will kill you, left to its own devices. So I need to warn you before you go into this meeting that this thing is really simple. It's so simple that it's going to sound stupid. It's so simple that it's going to sound like it can't work. But trust me, it works. And you need to just do it. You need to just go in and do the thing and give it a try. And you know what? I don't like, I'm not going to be personally hurt if you go in and you try it and you go back out, but you just need to try it and suspend disbelief and stop trying to be the smartest guy in the room and just do the program for a while and see if it works for you. And there's been no turning back since then. I've never had another drink, and I feel like I have maintained a pretty strong sense of emotional security, emotional sobriety since then. And I have joined other spiritual homes. I am now studying to be a priest in my other spiritual home. And I have a connection with my kids and my wife and my parents, including my dad, who's dead. I have a connection, an emotional connection with him that I never had before, which is, you know, another one of those things that if someone had ever told me before I got sober that I would be able to make amends to my father and truly heal my emotional relationship with my father, I would tell them that they were a crazy hippie and they needed to get out of my face and that that was not a thing that could happen. But it happened for me. And I had a dear friend who is an older friend in my home group who mentioned just offhand in one of her shares that she had made amends to her father. And I was in the middle of making my amends at that point. And I asked her after the meeting, I said, I need you to tell me about how you made amends to your dead father. This is a huge thing for me. This broken relationship with my father is something that I need to do something about or else it's going to poison me for the rest of my life. And he's buried in this really old cemetery in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I grew up. And it wasn't going to work out for me to go to Ann Arbor, but there's this really old cemetery right in the middle of East Portland called, the Lone Fir Cemetery. There's a bunch of the pioneers that, you know, came across on the Oregon Trail and were the founders of the state of Oregon and the city of Portland and that kind of stuff. They're all buried in this old cemetery. And it reminds me of the cemetery that's buried in. And I went there and I sat under one of the big old trees there and I meditated on my father. And I had this crazy experience where I was looking in a mirror over a sink, a bathroom mirror. And the person that I saw in looking back at me in the mirror was my father. And I had this experience of feeling love for me, myself, and for my children. And then just kind of dissipating out into star stuff, basically. And I just had this huge sense of relief and connection with my father in a way that I was never able to have when he was alive. I mean, those kinds of experiences that I've gotten from the program of AA are something that I could never have believed they were possible. I never even would have wanted them. Is the crazy thing about it is before I got sober, I wouldn't have wanted that. I wouldn't have wanted to have closure with my father because I loved being angry with him. I loved having that excuse for being a mess is my toxic relationship with my father. So I'm so grateful to this program and I'm so grateful to all of you. And I think I'm going to stop there.